Well, happy Sunday afternoon, everybody. Hi, this is Eric, and of course, it is another edition of Radio Free. No, this is not Radio Free Kafir Stan. This is Cross in the Crescent discussion group, also known on Blog Talk Radio as The Real Interfaith Dialogue. I better get with the program here. I was sitting there calling it the wrong radio show right from the beginning. Man, that's a bad way to start the show, to make a mistake. Okay, today's going to be kind of ugly, and I'm going to apologize in advance for that. This week what we're going to do is we're going to be looking at Muhammad and Muhammad being a standard of conduct for people to follow. And I was thinking about doing a topic like this probably about 2 weeks ago. And, when you start talking about Muhammad, you start offending people really quickly. And the intent of this show is not to offend. I don't want to be offensive. But when we start talking about who Muhammad was, what he did, things of that nature, for me, it makes it a little hard to ignore the elephant that's in the room. So what I want to do today is I just want to start off by looking at, and just to give you some background here, I've spent the last week reading paper after paper after paper, listening to podcasts from, people from Yasakati. I was listening to him. I was listening to Josh Evans, or Yeshua Evans, whatever he calls himself, and a couple other of those guys that have podcasts. iPod here. I've been listening to it all week, and I've been listening to a lot of the shows that they do on Muhammad, and it's like they venerate Muhammad. Now I get there's a difference between veneration of somebody as a deity versus adoration of somebody as a person. I get that, but when we start listening to them, it became pretty apparent to me where their mindset was, and that is they ignore the elephant in the room. And here's why we're doing this show. Let me bring this, share my screen here. Because Muhammad forces us to do this show. If we look at who Muhammad was, according to the Quran, it says he's a good example for you in the apostle. You have a good example in Muhammad, in the apostle of Allah, who's supposed to be Muhammad. And then he's supposed to be benevolent and kind, and that is found in chapter 9, verse 128, which is kind of ironic. It's the most violent chapter of the Quran. He's of great moral character, and indeed, you possess a great character. That's in chapter 68, verse 4. He's affectionate and compassionate, and that's in chapter 18, verse 6. He's wise and insightful, chapter 4, verse 113. He's a cause of survival from punishment, whatever that means. And, of course, he's supposed to be the messenger of Allah's revelation. So Muhammad is supposed to be all of these things to mankind, according to the Quran. And it's amazing when we look at not just what we find in the Quran about Muhammad, but what we find in the Hadith. And that's where our main focus is going to be today. If you want to find out, because Muhammad's only mentioned in the Quran by name four times, I believe. There's only four times where he's mentioned by name. Normally it's the Allah's apostle or the messenger or something, some words of that nature. But by name, it's only four times. So to find out who this example is and what this example is, it's not the Quran that where we need to go. It's the Hadith, and which is the sayings of Muhammad and the actions of Muhammad, and the Sirah, which is the biography of Muhammad. And that's where we're going to be spending the majority of the time today. Now, one of the things that I've always done is try to set the tone at the beginning of the show. And today we might consider this a logical fallacy of what I'm about to do. So if you don't want to have the tone set for you and you want to approach this with an open mind, I would suggest that you tune out for about the next 5 to 10 minutes. Don't pay attention to a word I'm going to say for about the next 10 minutes. Let's just put it that way. Because if you want to look at who Muhammad was and his character, for me, for a man, I'm older than Muhammad, I'm 56. Muhammad was 54 when this happened. But for me, if you want to look at, you know, somebody's character, Muhammad married little Aisha when she was 9 years old. Now, I don't say that to be grotesque or offensive, but the action itself is grotesque and offensive. So when we read words like, hold on, let me put this back up on the screen here. Let me put this back up on the screen here. Indeed, you possess a great character. He married Aisha and consummated the marriage when she was 9 and he was 54. He was affectionate and compassionate. He married Aisha when she was 9 and he was 54 and he consummated the marriage. He's wise and insightful. He married a 9-year-old little girl when she was 9 and he was 54 years old and he consummated the marriage. Let's see here. He's a messenger of Allah. And if you say he's a messenger of Allah, the man was 54 years old and he married and consummated the marriage with a 9-year-old little girl. So anytime we start looking at, oh, well, he was a benevolent man. Well, he went home after being benevolent to somebody and engaged in sex with a 9-year-old little girl. He was kind to other people and helped other people. But after he got done doing that, he went home to a 9-year-old little girl. Well, he used to give alms to the poor. After he got done to that, he would go home to a 9-year-old. It doesn't matter what you do after this. He wrecked the life, destroyed the life of a little girl. How do we know this? All we have to do is go to the hadith. We're not talking about just any hadith. We can go to Bukhari. Bukhari in volume 5, book 58, number 234. And the prophet engaged me when I was a girl of 6. And at the end of it, it says, at that time, I was a girl. My mother handed me over to him at that time. I was 9. You go to Sanan an-Nasa'i. It says it was narrated that Aisha said, this is the book of marriage, Hadith 3378. The messenger of Allah married me when I was 6 and consummated the marriage with me when I was 9. I used to play with dolls. Bukhari, volume 8, book 73, number 151. Narrated Aisha, I used to play with the dolls in the presence of the prophet and my girlfriends. My girlfriends also used to play with me. When the Allah's apostle used to enter my dwelling place, they used to hide themselves, but the prophet would call them to join and play with me. Now keep in mind, if you play with dolls, girls are not allowed to play with dolls after they enter puberty. So not only was she 9 years old, and he was 54. She was also prepubescent. And you go back to that first narration, it says, he consummated the marriage with me when I was 9. I don't know how you get past anything else this man did. I really don't. We're going to talk about it. That's for sure today. But after this one thing with this little girl, I do not know how you, as a Muslim, rationalize this. This is something I've tried to rationalize for years. For years, when I didn't even have my own show, that I would call into Islamic shows on Blog Talk Radio, and I would ask this question. And you would get answers ranging from, well, you have to understand Aisha was a special case. You have to understand that she was mature for her age and that girls in the Arabian Peninsula used to mature a lot faster back then. She was past her peers in her knowledge and understand. They would rationalize it any way they possibly could. She was 9 and he was 54. You try to engage people on social media. I engaged a mother, not less than 2 months ago, asking her about this. Well, what would you do if this was your daughter? And her answer was, if it was the prophet, if it was the messenger of God, I would let him do what he wanted. How lost do you have to be? You cannot rationalize that type of behavior anywhere. And also, by the way, when you bring it up in the presence of Muslims, it's like you're raping their daughter yourself. That's what their reaction is. That is the vitriolic reaction that you get when you bring this fact up. This fact. This is according to their own sources, folks. This isn't this kafir just making it up. Isn't it somebody wanting to make up a story about Muhammad? This isn't a story. This isn't just an attempt to try to besmirch the man's integrity because he's supposedly a prophet that contradicts the Bible. That's not the motivation here. The motivation here is to get you people to wake the hell up. What is wrong with you? If you think that this man was any type of benevolent, what does it say? Affectionate, compassionate, benevolent, possess a great moral character, what is wrong with you? I don't know how to fix it. I don't know how to reach somebody that is that blinded to think that a man can be affectionate, compassionate, benevolent, a messenger of God of any source of time when at the end of the day he goes home to a 9-year-old little girl and he's 54 years old. Not only that, he did it until the day he died. Aisha was his favorite wife. Why? Because she was – I have a granddaughter who is 9 years old. And – I'm sorry, 11 years old. She's 11 years old. I'm sorry. Not 9. She's 11. And I cannot even begin to tell you the scunion that would come – on any man my age that would even look at her in that way. If you are looking at, if you are my age, if you're, let's say it even worse, let's say you're Steve's age here. You're even older. I'm just kidding, Steve. I don't know how old Steve is. But let's say, and he just popped off. I was just kidding, Steve. But if you're my age and you are looking at a girl in that way, you need to go get some help. You need to go seek out some type of counseling. You need to seek out something to prevent you from having those urges and having those thoughts. Because if you follow through on those urges and thoughts today, you go to prison. Look at this right here. Did she complain? This is exactly what I'm talking about. You are sick. You are a sick individual. Did she complain? No. What in the heck is wrong with you? Oh, in the past, she was more maturity than man, old men in this panel. Did she complain? Can somebody just get rid of that? I don't even want to look at it. Thank you, Gedalia. Just bounce it. I don't want that here. I just can't. This is exactly what my point was. She's a prepubescent little girl, and she didn't complain. But that's not the only thing he did, and I'm gonna move on for that. But everything else that you hear today about what he did, this affectionate, compassionate, benevolent messenger of Allah did, begin with that. Begin with that thought and then proceed from there. Now, there's all kinds of other things that we're going to be covering today. And I promised John to let him lead off with the panel. So, Mr. Isaac, are you there, sir? Everybody is smiling. Look at all that. We got a lot of people. We got a good showing in the chat today. I like that.
Okay. Actually, speaker, first I'll try to answer her question. Did she complain about Aisha, baby Aisha? She can't complain. If she complained at her time, her father would kill her. Her father Abu Bakr would kill her. Because we read hadith. There is a single hadith saying that Aisha said to Muhammad, you think yourself in a situation. You think yourself a real prophet of God, then Abu Bakr hit her hard in the chest. It was not allowed to a woman to speak against men. Even Quran itself say the same thing. They are not allowed. And she was like, the marriage happened by the authority of her father. She didn't go out and say, I accept marriage of Muhammad. Abu Bakr was like responsible for her marriage. And as written in the Islamic sources, Aisha was a gift given from Abu Bakr to Muhammad. Do you accept that, guys? Gift, woman, marriage? Doesn't make any sense. It defends these words. Anyway, I'll speak today about the story happened between Safiya and Muhammad. Safiya was a Jewish wife of Muhammad, the only Jewish wife of Muhammad. Maybe many of us know the story, but I'll try to speak in more details. First, I'd like to make some introduction why Muhammad hates Jews, why he hated them too much, why Muhammad inherited this hate to all Muslims. Muslims hate Jews, and we see that on a daily basis. Let us begin with the story. The Jews came to Saudi Arabia or Arabia. They came and lived in two big cities, Yathrib or Al-Madinah, and another city called Khaybar. They lived peaceful life for around 1,000 years before Islam. 1,000 years before Islam, no one heard about one Jewish killed other Arab or make a war between Jewish and Arab. Nothing. They were living very peaceful for around 1,000 years in the two big cities. They didn't live in Mecca because Mecca was a pagan city. Kaaba and pagans doing Hajj and this stuff, they didn't like to live there. They lived in Medina or Yathrib and Khaybar. Then Muhammad came, and Muhammad began at Mecca, according to Islamic sources. He tried to convince people being peacefully. In the first 13 years in Mecca, he could convince around 130 persons only believed in him in 30 years. Less than 10 persons each year. Quraysh didn't believe in him. His tribe didn't believe in him. And they went to Jush to ask them about Muhammad. Is he a real prophet? It's written about him in Torah. I'll share now the screen to see this action, because this is very important to understand why Muhammad hated Jews. I'll share screen.
I don't see it, John. Yep. Okay, hold on. There we go. Hold on.
Yeah. First interaction between... do you see the share screen?
Yeah. Okay. Don't pressure me. I got it. All right. There you go.
First interaction between Muhammad and Jush happened in Mecca in the reason of revelation of Surah 18, the Surah Al-Kahf, that Zulqarnain and the funny stories of Yajuj and Majuj, all this stuff. What happened is Quraysh didn't believe in Muhammad. As we see, according to Islamic sources, only 130 persons believed in Muhammad in 13 years. Less than 10 each year. Then they go to Jush asking them, how can we know that he is a prophet or not? Jush was not, they were not living in Mecca, they were living in Medina. Let us read. Here, Muhammad ibn Ishaq mentioned that the reason of revelation of this surah, Surah 18, this is Tafsir ibn Kathir, was revealed. He said that an old man among the people of Egypt who came to them some 40 odd years ago told him, Quraysh sent a story, begins from here, the Quraysh tribe sent Al-Nadir ibn al-Harith and two friends of him and told them, Quraysh sent them, ask the rabbi about Muhammad and describe him to them and tell them if he is saying they are the people of the first book and they have more knowledge of prophets than we do. So they set out and they reach Al-Madina. They go to Medina, the place that I said that Medina, there is a lot of Oriyasrit, a lot of Jews. They asked the Jewish rabbis about the messenger and the story comes from here. They asked Jewish about Muhammad. They said, we don't have it in Torah. But let us see if he is a prophet or not. Ask him three questions. This is the rest of the words here. It's a long story, big story. Ask him three questions. And they went to ask the Quraysh tribe, go to Muhammad, ask him these three questions. The three questions, first one, what is the spirit? What is meant by spirit? Second one, who is the person go to left and right and he has big kingdom? You're speaking about Zulqarnain, Iskander the Great. And the third question, who were the people who had a funny story and they are well known in the Middle East or the early? We're speaking about the seven sleepers. They go to Muhammad and asked him these three questions coming from Jewish. Muhammad said, I'll give you the answer tomorrow. All of this is written here, but we don't need to spend more time. Okay? Muhammad couldn't give the answer in second day or the third day. He gives them the answer after 14 days. And some other sources say he gives them the answer after 30 days. And if you go to the Surah 18, Surah Al-Kahf, you see he didn't give any answer. He didn't say, he said that the spirit is known by Allah. I don't know anything about it. He didn't give the name of the person who go left and right. He didn't say Alexander the Great or Cyrus, nothing. He just said that he go here, he met Ya'qub and Majur. Funny story. He didn't mention the number of the sleepers. They were seven. He didn't even give the number in Quran. Then he failed miserably to give any answer for the three questions given to him by Jewish. Then Jewish knows that he is a fake prophet. Then Muhammad hated them since he was in Mecca, even before going to Medina, even before going to Asia. This is the main reason that Muhammad hated Jews, because they exposed him greatly in front of Quraysh. And I'll tell you another proof about my words later on. Okay? This is introduction. Muhammad hated Jews from day one because they exposed him as a fake prophet. Okay. Then Muhammad go to, after 13 years of da'wah, he went to Medina, Riyasir, make hijrah. And begin the wars between Quraysh and Muhammad. Many wars happened till the War of Trench. War of Trench was a big one. It's not like fight, but it was a big defeat for Quraysh. And it's written in Sira that Muhammad, after finished this war, he is returning back to his house. Jibril telling him, go kill Jush. Go kill Jews. Why Jibril tell Muhammad, told Muhammad, go kill Jews? And he showed him the way to Khaybar. Khaybar, second big city of Jews. Why Muhammad should go to kill Jews? What happened is there was a treaty between Muhammad and Jews. It was a treaty like they will help each other against Quraysh. As I said before, Jews were peaceful people, like peaceful people for 1,000 years, no war, no fight. When they saw the fight between Muhammad and his own tribe, Quraysh, they said to Muhammad, no, we don't want to fight, we want to return back as neutral people. Muhammad considered that as a break for the treaty. They didn't fight against him. There is no single Jew attack Muhammad or attack any Muslim. They just asked Muhammad to return back to be peaceful and neutral, not on his side, not on the side of Quraysh. But Muhammad considered that as like a treaty is broken and they should take revenge on them.
Hey, John. John, can I ask you a question? Somebody posted in chat. I have it up on the screen, and it was deleted by XYZ. Is there a reason is that something in Arabic there that is not appropriate, or because I don't.
I can't see it. If you can show me, I can have a look on it.
It's up on the screen. Can you see it?
It's he is insulting me. That's it.
Ah, okay.
He is insulting me. He is saying my house will be destroyed in Arab.
Nice guy.
Normal from Muslims.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Gedalia. I didn't know.
It's not a problem. It's normal behavior from Muslims.
Exactly. And I'm starting. You know, I've begun. You know, this whole thing. I've been doing the show for 4 years. I mean, this whole thing is just so eye opening to me. And you know, and I'm not trying to say that I'm the nicest guy in the world and that I haven't, you know, ticked people off before in my life. But I have never seen the vitriol that you get, that somebody gets when you start engaging with people who follow Muhammad. I mean, if you, and this is one of the things that I looked at this week, and I'm not trying to get you off subject here, but one of the papers that I was reading dealt with the conflict, this conflict that exists in the world. Anywhere you look where you have differences in religions, you're going to have conflict only with Islam. If you look at the Jews, everybody else in the world gets along with the Jews. The Christians get along with the Jews, the Hindus, the Buddhists, they all get along with the Jews. The only people that don't get along with the Jews are the Muslims. Everybody gets along with the Hindus. Christians get along with Hindus, Jews get along with Hindus, Buddhists get along with Hindus. The only people that don't get along with it and they see the conflict is with Muslims. Same thing with Buddhists. Same thing with Christians. The conflict comes from not the people, the Muslim people itself. It comes from their doctrine. What John is showing you here, this is just an example of what the benevolent, the caring, whatever person that Muhammad was supposed to be, and he wasn't. The fact is that he treated people that were not Muslims just like what John's describing. Okay, John, I'm sorry. I'm getting off my horse here.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Then we reached the point that Muhammad wanted to take revenge from Jews because according to him, they broke the treaty as a trench war. On the way to Khyber, he is going now to, we're getting now to Kinana ibn Rabia. Kinana ibn Rabia was the husband of Safiyya. Two brides, just newly married to Kinana. This part from Tariq al-Tabari, the history of Tabari, history of Islam for al-Tabari, volume 8. This is translation for what happened exactly. We need to read it to understand how this will affect Safiyya. Called Safiyya bint Huyay. Okay, according to Ibn Ishaq, Kinana ibn Rabia, this is name, who had the treasure of Banu al-Nadir. Banu al-Nadir is a tribe, a Jewish tribe. And he has all their money. He were trusted, they give him the money. Okay? Was brought to the messengers of God, Muhammad, who questioned him. He denied knowing where it is Muhammad wanted to take the money of Banu al-Nadir from Kinana ibn Rabia. Okay? But he refused to answer. He was honest guy. Then the messenger of God was brought a few who said to him, I have seen Kinana walk around his ruin every morning. The messenger of God said to Kinana, what do you say? If we find it in your position, I will kill you. Okay? All right. He answered. Kinana answered, said, all right. Kill me, but I'll not give you the money of others. The messenger of God, Muhammad, commanded that the ruin should be dug up and some of the treasure were extracted from it. Then they found the money. And the guy, Kinana ibn Rabi'ah, was very honest. He didn't give any information to Muhammad and his companion. And what will happen, we'll see now. Then he asked him for the rest of it. Kenana refused to surrender. Yes. So the messenger of God gave orders concerning him to Al-Zubayr ibn al-Awwam. Zubayr ibn al-Awwam was like a brother-in-law of Aisha. Was married to Asma, sister of Aisha. Was one of the family. And one of the biggest companions of Muhammad. So the messenger of God gave orders concerning him to Zubayr ibn al-Awwam, saying, torture him until you root him out. Not kill him. Torture him. We go to the second page. What he has, Al-Zubayr kept twirling his fire stick in his breast or his chest until Kinana almost expired. Then cut his head. If this action can be done by a good person, I will not say the best mankind is not. This is actions of a criminal. First, he came to Kinana to ask about the money. Kinana was honest, didn't give him any information. And he didn't kill him. He tortured him first before killing him. When you ask the Muslim about that, they say, Muhammad never killed any person. Yes, he never killed any person. But he ordered Zubayr ibn al-Awwam to torture a person and kill him. And while he was honest, he innocent, he didn't do anything. What's the best thing that Kinana did? Nothing. So Safiya saw what happened to her husband in front of her eyes for no reason. What is the reason killing Kinana? Ask any Muslim, they will say, no, Jews are bad, they hate Muhammad, they. But this is not true. This is not what the Islamic sources say. Then Muhammad continued, after he killed Kinana ibn Rabia, the husband of Safiya, to go to Khaybar, the biggest city of Jews, and he made a big genocide there. He killed all Jews of Bani Qurayza. Some sources say they about 900 persons. Some sources say no, they are less, 600, 500. At the end, there was a peaceful tribe of Jews called Jews Bani Qurayza, disappeared from history. Muhammad executed all of them. He kept the small boys, and these small boys were forced to join Islam. And he kept women and small girls as sex slaves or captives. And Safiya, the wife, the new wife of Kinana, her father was killed in the same day. Her brother was killed in the same day. She lost all her family in one day because of Muhammad wanted to take revenge from Jews. Now we'll continue, we'll go to Safiya. Took Safiya for himself after he saw her. He saw her, a beautiful girl. She was very beautiful. And he took her as a wife or a captive. We have two main hadiths about this instance or this case, how he took Safiya. Let us read them. All of them are sahih hadiths. Let us read them. One of them this one, sahih hadith, written down, sahih hadith by Al-Albani, Sunan Abu Dawud. Anas ibn Malik says the captives are gathered at Khaybar, after the war of Khaybar. Then Dahya is called Dahya al-Kalbi, he is one of the greatest companions of Muhammad, came out and said, Apostle of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, give me a slave girl from the captive. He said, go and take a slave girl. He took Safiya, daughter of Huyay, Safiya bint Huyay. Another man, then came to the Prophet and said, you give Safiya, daughter of Huyay, chief lady of Qurayza, Bani Qurayza, and Al-Nadir to Dahya. It suits you. Then according to the version, there are two versions of Hadith. The good version said, she is worthy of you. He said, call him along with her. When the Prophet looked at her, said to him, take another slave girl from the captive, and Prophet then set her free and married her. Then in the same day, according to Hadith, and this is a Hadith down here, same day when he killed her husband and her father and her brother, all her family, and she saw this big genocide. He looked to her. She was very beautiful. If he took her as a captive, then he set her free and married her. When you ask a Muslim about that, he said, no, look the beauty of Islam. Look, Muhammad set her free. And instead of being active, he make her free. And some sources say that Muhammad asked her, do you like to continue with me or return back to your family? Where is her family? All her family are killed in front of her eyes in one day. Because Muhammad, either to be with me or I kill you. This is what happened. This is what Islamic sources say. Set her free, this is nonsense. Set her free to do what? All her family is killed. Then this hadith shows that Muhammad married her in the same day. Let us go to another hadith. If you have any question, you can ask in the middle topic.
Well, I do have one, John. John, you talk about Muhammad having the entire tribe of the Banu Qurayza killed. And it was only the men that he killed, if I'm not mistaken there. Can you tell all of us what the criteria God's apostle used in order to determine who would be murdered and who would live?
There is a hadith said by one of the young boys who survived this genocide, said that the criteria that they checked is the hair of young boys over the penis. If they are grown enough, then they will kill them. If they are still young boys, didn't reach the puberty or something, they will let them keep them.
Okay, so let's just let that sink in just for a second, folks. Let that sink in for a second. The criteria. Thank you, Gedalia. He used pubic. Yeah, exactly. This is what you're saying. Pubic hair. That was his criteria. It wasn't whether the fact that they were insurrectionists. It wasn't the fact of whether or not they had committed some type of crime against Muhammad, preached some type of sedition. The only criteria that he used, the apostle of God, pubic hair. Sick. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's expected, but the problem is all these young boys were forced later to be Muslim. This guy who mentioned this hadith is, he said, after joining Islam. Do you think that he is from inside my heart, inside his heart? He's a Muslim. He was a Muslim, real Muslim. After he saw father or his brother was killed this way? No way. No way. Okay, let me continue. Let us see the second hadith because it's interesting. Second hadith in Sahih al-Bukhari. And it's Sahih. I'll go down here. Sahih al-Bukhari is the number. And let us read it from the beginning. This is the second hadith how Muhammad married Safiya. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam came to Khaybar, and when Allah made him victorious and he conquered the town by breaking the enemy's defense, the beauty of Safiya bint Huyay bin al-Akhtab was mentioned to him, and her husband had been killed while she was a bride. Yes, she was newly married. Allah Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam selected her for himself, and he set out in her company till he reached Sad al-Rawha. Sad, this word, it's an Arabic word, means dam. Dam, like a place between Khaybar and Medina. They are going back to Medina, because Muhammad at this time was in Medina. Where her menses were over, and he married her. Hadith said, no, he didn't marry her in the same day. He married her at a place in the middle between Khaybar and Medina. Let us see the map. Let us go see the map. I got the map of Saudi Arabia. Let us see the distance and see how many days. Let us see the stuff. Here's Saudi Arabia. You can see Medina here south. about 174 kilometers, or by car, now our time now is about less than 2 hours. Let us say they are going from Khyber to Medina, let us say by camels, horses, whatever, takes like 2-3 days, 7 days, maximum week, not more, okay? Then Muhammad, according to Hadith, either married Safiya after he's calling to father and brother and husband in 10 days or in the 7 days, and all of this before going to Medina. Sources say that Muhammad, when married Safiya, he go to his tent, and there was a man called Abu Ayyub, one of the companions called Abu Ayyub, was standing in front of the door. Why? To protect Muhammad, because what he did in Jush, they were afraid there's someone like revenge from him. Then he was standing all night in front of the door to protect Muhammad from the revenge of Jush. And in the morning, Muhammad asked him, what happened, Abu Ayyub? Why you are tired? I didn't sleep the night, messenger of Allah, because I'm protecting you. What a shame. Okay? Don't tell me that was marriage. How can a woman lose her husband this way after torturing him? Her father, her brother, all her tribe, all her peaceful tribe, in one day, and accept marriage of the person who killed all of them. And there is a book, but it's in Arabic. I don't have the translation for it. This book is named Signs of Prophethood for the Imam al-Bahayani. Said there is like a hadith speech between Safiya and Muhammad. Safiya said to Muhammad, I don't like you. You killed all my family. You killed my father. Muhammad answered, I killed him because he made my face bad in front of Quraysh. So he didn't forget how Jush exposed him as a fake prophet. Then he take revenge from them this way. Unfortunately, this hate from Muhammad to Jush, it's like was inherited by Muslims till now. We can see in any demonstration against Israel or even in the streets in Egypt, my country, Muslims say like a song, say, Khaybar, Khaybar, ya Yahud, Yaishu Muhammad, Tawfa Ya'ud. This is in Arabic. If we translate it, says, Jush, remember what happened in Khaybar. The army of Muhammad will return back. This we see in any demonstration against Jush in Egypt, in whatever, any Islamic country speaking Arabic. Because they are proud what happened in Khaybar of this in Israel. Then, it's a poor girl, and it was never magic. It's a rap. He rubbed her. She was not with her will to marry him. She was against her will. Okay? I finished the story of Muhammad and Safiya, but I would like to add two more points refuting some Muslim imams or line of da'wah in Muhammad. I'll begin with Imam Kenny Boomer. Imam Kenny Boomer, like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, made a pretty good show about the best 40 hadiths of Muhammad. Okay, and said, look, the speech of Muhammad is very beautiful. Look, the beauty of Islam, something amazing. Amazing words of Muhammad. Why Islamophobes hate Islam? Why are haters of Islam, Islamophobes, this stuff? Okay? Let me ask a question. All these hadiths of Muhammad are authentic? True hadith? No, the answer is no. I'll give examples right away. I'll give examples right away. We have here hadith. It's well known. I know this hadith since when I was 5 years old or 6 years old. In Egypt, this hadith, we say it in the street. Hadith speaks, says, Muhammad said, heaven or Jannah is under the feet of mothers. This hadith says, Jannah is under the feet of mothers. Look, it's a very beautiful hadith. Islam honors women. Islam honors mothers. Jannah is under the feet of mothers. You can't find that in any other religion. Islam is the best. This hadith is not weak, it's munkar. Munkar, according to this is the website of Dar al-Ifta or the Grand Mufti of Egypt, this hadith is munkar, it's less than weak. Okay, and it's written in, but in Arabic, I couldn't get it in English, but I took these words, I put in Google Translate. Let us see how this hadith, it's worse than weak. Not only weak, worse than weak. And although we use it every day to express that Islam honors women, but it's less than weak. I put it in Google Translate. We know Google Translate is not accurate. We'll see. Hadith says the paradise is under the feet of mother. Good. Ibn Hudayy narrated this story. May God rest his soul, and said, the Messenger of God, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, peace be upon him, said, paradise is under the feet of mothers. But Ibn Ubayy said, Moses, the chain of narration, was a guy called Musa or Moses, Ibn Muhammad al-Maqdisi is a modern denier. So this is wrong translation from Google Translate. We know Google Translate is not accurate. What happened is, word hadith in Arabic has different meaning. Maybe Stephen confirmed that with me. Hadith here is translated as hadith in English, as we know. But hadith here, they make it translated modern. If you put hadith, the same word as the beginning here, there, is denier hadith means we deny all hadith coming from that. And as a proof, here we put the word hadith as we know, Arabic, in Google Translation. This is the word hadith in Arabic here. This is the pronunciation hadith as we know. It, Google translated is up to date. Word hadith in Arabic has different meaning. Can be up to date, can be hadith, Muhammad, an interview, modern, as done before. Anyway, this is the website of the Grand Mufti of Egypt. Shows that one of the best hadith given by Muhammad is not only weak, it's munkar, below the weak. Then many hadith of Muhammad, the good hadith are only, it's not weak, it's very munkar and can be used at all. There is another hadith, also a weak hadith, said that there was a Jew man who died, okay, and the funeral was passing beside the house of Muhammad. Then Muhammad stand up, respecting the funeral of a Jew. And Muslim, look, Muhammad, although Jews hate Muhammad too much, but Muhammad respected the dead Jew. And he stand up in his funeral. This hadith also is weak. Because Muhammad hated Jews from the bottom of his heart since days of Mecca, not even before going to Medina. Then we have many hadiths. If we can take all of these hadiths and study them, we have many hadiths of the good words of Muhammad are fake ones, and I show you a proof of two of them, or one exactly, and this other one I can show you later if you want. There is another point about the good words of hadiths of Muhammad. Actions are louder than words. What Muhammad can give good advices, but at the end, what he will do, what he did, good actions or bad actions. If he is doing the same as he was advising, then he is a good guy. Let us take a hadith, see what he said, and see if he applied or not. This is hadith in Sahih, in Sunan Nasa'i. This is the number, Sahih hadith, okay? Narrated Abdullah ibn Buraida. It was narrated from Abdullah ibn Buraida that his father said, Abu Bakr and Umar Abu Bakr and Umar, the companions of Muhammad, may Allah be pleased with them, proposed marriage to Fatma. Fatma was the daughter of Muhammad. But the messenger of Allah said, she is young. Then Abu Bakr, Umar, came to Muhammad to ask to marry Fatma. Fatma was much younger than them. Said, she is young. No, you can't marry her because there is big difference in age between Abu Bakr and Fatma, and Umar and Fatma. Then Ali, is the cousin of Muhammad, proposed marriage to her, and he married her to him. This is called hypocrisy because Muhammad married Aisha, and there was big difference in age between him, 53, and her, 9. This then, here we can see good advice. But what Muhammad did he apply this advice or did something else? Did the opposite. Then how can I believe in his words? Even he said good words, he didn't apply them in his life. We can see a lot of problems, a lot of killing. Muhammad didn't kill anyone, but he ordered to kill Al-Kanana ibn Rabi'a, he ordered to kill all Jewish Bani Quraiza, he ordered to kill Asma bint Marwan, Umm Khurfa. There is long list by ordering to kill from Muhammad. Kill anyone, leave the Islam, apostate, all of them should be killed. Then it is not, the actions are much louder than words. He can say what he says. She is young, I can't marry, her. But he married to a young girl. This is, Muslim defend Muhammad by two things. First thing that he has good words. So what? These good words are weak hadith. Many of them weak hadith. And some of the, and many of good words, good advices are, he didn't apply, but he did the opposite thing. There is another way Muslim defend Muhammad. Yeah, there's we have like a movie in Egypt or an Arabic cinema called Devil is Preaching. It speaks about an evil person who was stealing money from others, who was sleeping with women beside his wife, doing a lot of things, and at the end, they give advices to people. This is Muhammad. This is exactly Muhammad. Do you believe that Muhammad is a prophet from God? No. No way. The actions is important. Okay. The second way that Muslims defend Muhammad is the opinion of non-Muslims about him. I saw today, just a few hours before this show today, the line of Dawah making big posts about the non-Muslims' view about Muhammad. They said that he is good, the Islam is the best religion, and long list of people. You are Islamophobe, why do you hate Muhammad? Look for the writers, look for the thinkers, they are much, much better than you. You don't have their mind. But let us have two, I'll take two examples to show you something. Sir Bernard Shaw, this is a well-known meme in all debates. We saw it 100 times, non-Muslim views about Muhammad. If we read it, I have held that the religion of Muhammad in high estimation because of its wonderful vitality. It's the only religion which appears to me to possess that assimilating capacity to the changing phase of existence which can make itself appeal to every age, and so on. Okay? If you go to search this word, search, what is the source? When did Bernard Shaw say that? Where? You can't find anything. You can't find anything. It's hoax. Bernard Shaw didn't say that. This is hoax, a lie. Like Jean-Claude Van Damme converted to Islam. Angelina Jolie converted to Islam. All of these are hoax. Muslims like to make up some lies, and they believe in their lies, unfortunately. Never, I didn't find any source. They put a number, they put like page, I go back to this page, I didn't find anything. exactly what he said about Islam. That's the sayings of Bernard Shaw about Islam. Let us read. Islam is very different. Being intolerant. Islam is intolerant. If you go read at the end, you accepted Allah or you had your throat cut by someone who didn't accept him and who went to paradise for having sent you to hell. This is his opinion, and here the reference letter page, you can check this. This is what he said about Islam. Opposite completely to the meme given by Muslims in all debates daily. Okay, then I would like Muslims to go to make their homework, check these memes, return back to the source. If there is no source, then it's hoax. Don't believe in that. It's made by a liar, and you have been lied to. Another thing, Michael Hart, the book of 100 most influential men in the history. People say that Muhammad is in the list, not in the list, it's number one in the best 100 men in the history. Michael Hart didn't say best men. There is no word best. He said this man has a big influence or big effect in history. Let us see what it says. It's this one is like a review about the book. Okay, this is a list chosen by Michael Hart from the book 100 Most Influential People in the World, not best. He chose people on a ranking of who had done the most to affect the world. I recommend the reading of the book as it offers an interesting insight into the influence of different individuals. As the author notes, this is the word of the author, Michael Hart. Influential doesn't include a judgment on whether they affected the world for better or worse. You can find Muhammad number one in the list. Yes, I agree. Before Muhammad, Arab were fighting together. We see in history like wars between tribe and another tribe for 100 years, for 40 years. It could make them one unit. Instead of fighting each other, they go fight Romans, they go fight Persians. Nothing more. Is he a prophet? No, he didn't say that. Michael Hart. Is he good? Did good action good effect to the history? No, he didn't say that. He said he changed the face of history. Yes, the most change come from Islam. Arabs became united and they invaded the whole world. And in the same list of Michael Hart, you can see Hitler. Is Hitler good? No. Then this list is not for good men. No, it's effect only on history. I finished. I would like to just to summarize the 2 points. Kenny Goodman said that hadith are good for Muhammad. I said that many hadith are weak and munkar. And also the actions showing that Muhammad was a hypocrite, saying something and doing the opposite. Line of da'wah says that words of non-Muslims are showing that Muhammad is good and we don't understand him well. But this is not true, because I get some examples. It was hoax said by Bernard Shaw. He never said that. And Michael Hart, he didn't say that Muhammad is good. He says that he has big effect on history. That's it. I finished my point. If you have questions.
I do have a question, John. Okay, so this Safiya girl had her dad, her brother, and her husband killed by Muhammad in one day. And then Muhammad marries her that night.
Yeah, some sources say at night, and other sources like Sahih in the middle between Khaybar and Medina, and I show the map here. It's like 2-3 days maximum.
Okay, so with just in a short period of time of basically taking everything that provides her security in her life, she has to marry this guy. Now,
can to return her family is killed. What she do? What can she do? What?
Right. Did she complain? I mean, that was one of the things that the first guy said, Aisha didn't complain, did she? She's only...
Yeah, she complained, but I have the book, but in Arabic. She complained and she said to Muhammad, I don't like you because you killed my father, brother, and husband. Muhammad answered, said, I killed your father because he made my face bad in front of Quraysh. They made my face bad in front of Christ. And this is written in book called The Signs of Prophethood for Imam al-Bahyaqi. It's in Arabic, but I don't have any English translation for it.
This is the pattern of conduct for all time.
We don't need to say that she loved to marry him or not. We have mind here. We should use our mind. New wife. She saw her husband tortured and killed in front of her eyes. Then show her father. He was the big boss of the whole tribe. Killed in front of her eyes. And brother. And you take her to marry the person who killed all of them. You accept. By logic, she will not like that. It was not marriage, it's rape.
Some of these things you just cannot, you cannot understand how they are not acknowledged. I mean, maybe Stephen or you can tell us, does the average, everyday, run-of-the-mill Muslim know these things about Muhammad?
No, they don't know. They know that the Jews they try to kill Muhammad, and they hate Muhammad, and Muhammad just makes self-defense against them.
But
as we see, there is no self-defense. Jews never killed any Muslim. Tell me story about Jews killed a Muslim in Medina. Nothing. Zainab bint al-Harith, the Jewish woman, he lost her family in Banu Qurayza genocide. Tried to kill Muhammad by sending him the poison inside the lamp. Yes, after the genocide, and this is normal. Muhammad killed all her family, killed all her tribe. This is the reaction to what Muhammad did. But Jews never attacked Muhammad. Show me any source saying that there was a Muslim killed by Jews.
Oh, I don't. You don't ever find one. At least I've never seen one anyway. That doesn't mean they don't exist. That just that I've never seen one. Yeah. Okay. So you have this young girl whose life is just completely disrupted by Muhammad, and then you have And let me just go back to this again, just so we understand. Let me bring this back up here. I'm sorry. I stopped sharing my screen because we had a lot of people popping into the studio. But when you look at this, I mean, he's supposed to be of great moral character. He's supposed to be kind, merciful, faithful, benevolent, affectionate, compassionate, and what do we find? Number one, he's married a 9-year – I'm going to go back to it. I'm just going to keep going back to it. He marries a 9-year-old little girl, and then, yes – he rapes her. I don't know. You can't call it anything else, whether she complained or not. And we're getting to that. And then he goes in and he has this poor girl's family slaughtered. She was a Jew because they were Jews. And this is and here's the pattern that we see also. I mean, if you look at what happened to Martin Luther, I grew up as a Lutheran. They don't teach you this in our little Lutheran, what we'd call that, confirmation classes. You have to go to confirmation every Saturday morning for 2 years. And you learn anyway, they didn't tell you that Luther died in a vitriolic anti-Semite. And I hate to put it like this because I love what the things that Luther did teach. I do admire that. But what he did, and I would never say that – this is the difference. Before you start saying, well, Kaffer, didn't you just – no. Martin Luther is not a pattern of conduct to follow. Let's just put it that way. He had some great ideas. He had a lot of intestinal fortitude and courage to stand up to the Catholic Church to start the Reformation. But he's not somebody that I would venerate or hold up in any way, shape, or form. He was a vitriolic anti-Semite. And the reason why is because he believed that once the Jews saw that his teachings were meant to reform the teachings of the Catholic Church, that the Jews would then flock to Christianity. And when they didn't, this is where you start seeing these vitriolic outrages on Luther's part. And this is exactly what, as you mentioned, John, that we saw with Muhammad. Once the Jews just completely denied, because the Jews were a lettered people, they could read their scriptures and go, no, you're not a prophet at all. So it wasn't hard to see. What are we doing, Steve? Are you sharing your screen?
I'm sorry about that. I wanted to get a second to share it to watch this video. It's only a few minutes long, but it'll make you throw up.
We'll put it up there. We'll watch it. That's okay. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, about 12 pages of notes that we have to get through. So let's watch your video instead. Okay.
A very common one, and that is that many people, non-Muslims, and sometimes even Muslims, are perturbed that how Aisha, our mother, was married at a very young age. And frankly, this is a question that people and intelligent researchers that are non-Muslim never bring up. Because what is happening here is that we are taking our cultural norms, and then projecting them onto the Arabian society. You see, the age of marriage is something that has no normative, no standard age. And cultures and ethnicities throughout the centuries had different ages of marriage. Shakespeare wrote his famous Romeo and Juliet. Do you know that the first actors that played Romeo and Juliet were how old? 15 and 14 years old. The boy was 15, the girl was 14. For Shakespeare's time, now if we had a Romeo and Juliet play, the content and the love scenes and the romance, we would project it onto an 18 or 19 and a 19 or 17 year old, you know? We would say, oh, this is a young man and a young woman. In our age, in 2014, Romeo and Juliet, we think of like a 19-year-old with his 17-year-old sweetheart or 18-year-old sweetheart. That's our version. Well, when Shakespeare wrote the play, it was for a 14-year-old and a 15-year-old. Right? Only 500 years ago. In that age and time, people matured faster. They were not treated like little kids in the bodies of adults. Adolescence didn't exist in that regard. When you became a young man or woman, biologically mature, you were treated like a young man and a woman. And therefore, culture changes. In America, 100 years ago, young ladies would get married regularly at the age of 13 and 14. That is why, until very recently, literally like a few decades ago, in some states, including my own state of Tennessee, where I currently live, the law said that you have to be 14 years old to get married. Recently, they changed that, updated that. But when the laws were written 100 years ago, what was the age they put for marriage? 14. Now, you tell me, today, if somebody marries a 14-year-old, he's going to go to jail. But their own grandmothers and grandfathers, forget their own. Let me be totally blunt here. My grandmother, may Allah Azza wa Jalla bless her with Jannah, she's passed away. She's the only grandparent I ever met. My grandmother in India, back in the 1920s, she got married at the age of 13. My grandmother. And I knew her as a very righteous, as a very good, you know, Muslim lady. She never complained or she was irritated for her whole life. My father married me when I was 13. She had a great grandfather. That's my grandfather. She's a great husband. She had lots of children. That was the cultural norms. Why are you defending Aisha when Aisha was the happiest wife in the whole world? Who are you to get irritated when Aisha herself was the luckiest, most fortunate woman in the whole world? She wasn't complaining. She wasn't really anything bad. So in that day and age, puberty, intellectual maturity, in the hot Arabian climate, in the desert life, young children age faster because you have to take on responsibilities. So Aisha's age, in her time, would be our equivalent of whatever, 16, 17. I have no doubt that if things proceed in another 100 years, it will be illegal to marry an 18 or 17-year-old. And I have no doubt, because we're progressing or whatever, regressing in that regard, the minimal marriage age will be rising
as it has risen in the last 600 years. This is a human fact. This is an undeniable fact. Western culture itself has continued to...
Anyway, isn't that beautiful?
Yes, President, he shakes. Is he watching?
Okay, he said that people matured faster back then. That's a lie. There is no proof. There's no proof at all. Matured physically faster back then. As a matter of fact, the proof or the evidence points in the opposite direction. A lot of when people enter puberty is driven a lot of the time by your diet, how much you weigh. And if you're not eating a protein-rich diet, you're not going to gain weight until you become much older. So therefore, you would mature later. You would enter puberty later. So that, number one, is a lie, and it's not supported by any of the science. Number two, he said the kids that portrayed Romeo and Juliet were 14 and 15. Okay. They weren't 14 and 60. That's the point. That is the biggest point that this guy is completely missing. He's completely leaving out the fact that his grandpa was 13 years old. Yeah, I bet grandpa was probably 16 years old when he married grandma. He wasn't 50. He wasn't some old scumbag trying to go after a little girl. That's the biggest difference that he is absolutely refusing to look at. This. So when you said, yeah, is it going to make you sick? Yeah, that makes me sick to my stomach that somebody would try to legitimize somebody or give them any legitimacy when they act that way. That just go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so his claim was that back in the 7th century, the heat matured little girls faster, so I guess maybe 1 year back then was 3 years. So what happened to the heat today? Is it not still hot in Saudi Arabia today? I mean, is the temperature that much different between the 7th century and now?
We have global warming.
Assure you, it's still as hot in Saudi Arabia today as it was back then. It's 100 plus in South Florida. I don't see little 9-year-old girls being mature. Now, I do see 9-year-olds and 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds being mature, which is ridiculous, but I can assure you, it's all the crap and the hormones that we have in today's food that's maturing our kids a lot quicker. I'll give you an example. My son, at 11 years old, had pubic hair. So in the time of Muhammad, they would have killed my son simply because he had pubic hair.
Yeah, that was the criteria. That's the criteria. That was the criteria for the binocularizer, yeah.
All right, so, I mean, this whole, you know, it's the weather and this and that. Oh, in the United States 100 years ago, people used to marry, you know, 10-year-olds. But here's the thing. We're talking about a man who is said to be the prime example that every Muslim is supposed to follow. This is not Shakespeare and two teenagers in a play. This is a man that you're supposed to emulate. Now, we know King David, you know, committed adultery. I don't know if anybody says that King David is the perfect example that we should strive to emulate, or Solomon, or Abraham, or any of the prophets, including Moses. But Muhammad is supposed to be the perfect example. And this is a man from God. So if he's a perfect example, that tells me, which explains why we have child marriages even today, it's because Muhammad did it. Now, is this a man of God? I don't think so. I mean, did 10-year-olds maybe marry 14-year-old kids back then? Probably so. They weren't prophets. They didn't start a religion that's followed by 1.6, 1.8 billion. Even when they say, well, King so-and-so married his wife at 8. Even if that were true, is the king the perfect example? Have we taken up his example? And is that right? It would still be wrong. And was the king 50-something years old having sex with a 9-year-old? I seriously doubt that. I don't think those people were that sick back then.
Well, this is one of the ways that they justify it. This is exactly how they justify it, though. Look what he said. He said, well, back then they got married at much younger ages. And this is true. They did get married at much younger ages. But they didn't marry old scumbags when they were that young. They would marry other kids that were around that age. They wouldn't marry old men. This idea, this is nothing more than a way to deflect from what is patently obvious. Now, I was told that my microphone was cutting in and out, and I apologize for that.
The 1500s would have been around the time of the Puritans. This would have been around the time of the Puritans. So around the time of Shakespeare, it would have been roughly around the time of the Puritans.
Right.
The Puritans were so strict on this kind of thing. It's like, it's absurd. I mean, you had roughly, was it the actual Geneva Bible around the time of kind of Shakespeare. So if he's trying to quote something, there's no source that he's actually quoting from. Not unless it's an obscure source. That you can't liken Shakespeare to Muhammad, or like even Muhammad. Shakespeare would probably condemn Muhammad as well. In his writings,
well, he was trying to say that the people who portrayed Romeo and Juliet were teenagers, 14 and 15 years old. But this is exactly what he's doing. This is what he's trying to do, is he's trying to deflect the attention away from the fact. And when he says that my grandmother was 13 or whatever, he's deflecting the attention away from the age of the man in this case. When I was 15 years old, I had crushes on girls that were 14. When I was 16 years old, my wife was 15. So you're going to naturally have desires for other people your age. You're not. I sit in classrooms with 14-year-old girls all day long. There is no desire here, folks, in that, to look at those girls that way. And that is because I am a man. A man does not look at little girls as prospective partners to have some type of physical relationship with. You just don't do. That's not natural to feel that way. Gedalia had put in there that these feelings that Muhammad had were abnormal, because why? His first wife, Khadijah, how old was she? She's 40. And how old was Muhammad? He was 25. That's a 15-year difference. Now, that is a lot of, you know, I'm not saying that never happens. I mean, you look at the president of France today. I mean, he's married to a lady as old as his mother. But it's not natural. You don't naturally – you're not naturally attracted to people that much younger or that much older than you. Not naturally, anyway. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but if it does happen, if you, and this is what I said earlier, if you are a 53-year-old man and you have these type of feelings for a girl that age, 9 years old, there's places for you, and they're called penitentiaries. We put you in a cage, and when you get in that cage, every other person that is in that cage with you hates your guts, because they can see that you have no respect for the absolute epitome of what innocence looks like in our society. The absolute epitome of what a man, a grown man, should be doing to a young girl that age. A grown man should be looking to protect a young girl that age, not to try to take some type of sick physical pleasure in a girl that age. The whole, to say that he was a pattern of conduct. Let me go back to the page. I'm going to go back to the page. I'm going to do it. If he was supposed to be kind, merciful, faithful, great moral character, benevolent, kind, affectionate, compassionate, you're a liar. You are an absolute liar. And we've had people on the show today that objectively demonstrate that. Well, she didn't complain. You're sick. All right. I'm sorry. This whole week I've just been kind of consumed with this idea. When we start thinking about, okay, he's supposed to be the standard conduct to follow for all time, but at the same time, if you dare to criticize it, and oh, here's something that I wanted to mention too. I had circled it. I put it in my notes here. If you would dare to criticize Muhammad under the Sharia. Under the Sharia. It says right here, page 597, on page 597 of the Jurisprudence Manual for Islamic Law, for the Sharia, it says, acts that entail leaving Islam, which is apostasy. And we had a whole show on this on, was that Tuesday we had the show on apostasy? I think we had a whole show on apostasy on Tuesday and what that looked like. This is one of the things that is punishable under the apostasy laws. And it says to revile Allah. It doesn't stop there. To revile Allah or his messenger. So apostasy includes any type of criticism of Muhammad. Would making it illegal to criticize this character of good conduct, benevolency, kind, great moral character, affectionate, would it make sense to make it illegal if this person was indeed of great moral character and an example for all time? Would it make any sense to make that illegal? Ask yourself that. Why would it be illegal to provide any type of criticism for somebody of great moral character? If you look at people who criticize Jesus Christ today, we as Christians look at that and we're like, dude, yeah, we're going to – and you see it all the time on social media. Criticizing, well, did Jesus say this? Didn't Jesus do that? I mean, why would you want to, you know, think of Jesus Christ in that way? And the whole world looks at him and goes, what type of idiot would do that? Because they know what Christ taught. That is the example that we should all look to follow, not this example that Muhammad set. One of the worst things a human being could do to another human being is take their life, kill them. There was a movie made a number of years ago with Clint Eastwood. I wonder if anybody would type into chat if they've ever seen that, Unforgiven. Anybody ever see that movie, Unforgiven? You see that, Kufar? Dr. Kufar,
yeah.
Have you seen that movie, Unforgiven? With Clint Eastwood. Okay, yeah, the heck of a thing killing a man. You take everything he has and everything he's ever going to have. That, I mean, that's just a classic. What Muhammad did or had done to other people, murdering somebody, is probably the most heinous thing that you could do. If I went out and I killed somebody because I didn't particularly like them, and I went before the judge and I said, look, judge, you know, here's my defense, judge. Number one, the guy had it coming to him. I mean, he did this, he did that, and but number two, more importantly, I only killed just one person. Are people going to regard me as a good pattern of conduct to follow if I just killed one person, or if I just had one person killed? Is that ever going to happen? And the quickest answer is absolutely no. If you go out and you kill one person, you are a murderer. And we throw people like that into prison for the rest of their lives. So you're not going to think that somebody is a pattern of conduct to follow if they're a murderer. But look what I found. I have 18 pages, 43 examples of where Muhammad – either, how's this listed? Ordered the murder, supported but not ordered the killing of people. And I can go through here, and this one was killed. This is Asma bint Marwan for opposing Muhammad with poetry. Abu Afak opposing Muhammad through poetry. Al-Nadir bin Haraya, mocking the Quran as false tales of the ancients, mocked and harassed Muhammad and wrote poems and stories criticizing him. What else do we got going here? Kab ibn al-Ashraf composed verses in which he bewailed the victims of the Quraysh who had been killed at Badr. Oh, don't complain about genocide, guys. Muhammad will have you killed. Abu Rafin ibn Abi al-Ahruq, I can't pronounce this. For mocking Muhammad with his poetry. What else we got going here? The Banu Qurayza tribe, of course, we talked about that. Abu Sufyan, let's see, Abdullah bin Qattal, let's see, for reciting poems insulting Muhammad. Fartana, she used to sing satirical songs about Muhammad. Kureba, killed, this is a slave girl of Abdullah bin Qattal, because she used to sing satirical songs about Muhammad. Hold on, we're almost done here, folks. Let's see here. Kabin ibn Zurhu ibn Abi Sulama, for writing satirical poems about Muhammad. I was told that the Messenger of Allah threatened me with death, but with the Messenger of Allah, I have hope of finding pardon. Didn't work out for him. Al-Hirith bin Al-Talatilil, for mocking Muhammad through poetry. Do you see a pattern here? He doesn't like people mocking him. What does it say in Reliance of the Traveler? To revile Allah and his messenger. Maybe with, I don't know, drawing cartoons. Ever hear of a place or a newspaper called Charlie Hebdo? Let's see here. Who else we got? Abdullah ibn Zibara, for writing insulting poems about Muhammad. Hubaraya, killed for mocking Muhammad through poetry. So person after person after person after person is killed with the permission of or the encouragement of Muhammad for mocking him. It sounds to me like somebody had some pretty thin skin. It sounds to me like if you would mock Muhammad, you would be called, let me think, it begins with an I and ends with Islamophobe. Gee whiz, that sounds so familiar. So if I come on the show and I would say, Muhammad did this, he married a girl when she was 9 and he was 54. Is that Islamophobia? Is that hate speech? Is that hatred? No, it's supposed to be, I'm, and here's the weirdest thing. You're trying to say that pedophilia is wrong, and to say that pedophilia is wrong across the board and at any time and under any circumstance, to say that now, you're a hate preacher. You're a phobe of some sort. There's something wrong and something sick about that. I heard somebody ruffling in the back. Did somebody want to come up and say something? I'm done with my rant. I'm sorry. Sometimes I get going.
If I may.
Who is this? Is this guy with that Pakistani accent?
Yes.
Yes. How are you, Adam? It's good to see you here. Thanks for coming.
Very racist of you to say that, but fair enough.
We appreciate you coming.
Hey, by the way, very well said. I was writing on the comment. I don't know if you have seen it. The problem is not that, okay, back in those days, women might get mature early. Okay. But it is not a marriage of a 9 years old with a 12 or 11 or 12 or 14 or 15 years old. We are talking about a marriage of a 9 years old with a 53 years old. So it has nothing to do with how early a person is mature. It's about a age of a grandfather marrying a child.
Exactly.
That's the basic point that you miss. Number two. When we talk about Khadija, a lot of people say Khadija is 40 years old. I have a challenge to all the Muslimin. Can you give me one hadith with the chain of narration, which is called Sahih, which gives the age of Khadija to be 40. Just one.
How do we come up with that number then? Because that's the number that I was told.
That's a da'if hadith.
Okay.
The hadith which have more authenticity with some better chain of narrations, it would be either 20, 22, or 25 for the age of Khadija. They took the 41 because it would made Muhammad look good. So I'm going to do a show probably this week, and I'm going to show all these ahadiths for the age of Khadija and prove that they deliberately took this falsified hadith to show and rank Muhammad up and say he married a 40 years old. 3, his first marriage was a 48 years old.
Let me ask you a question. How does that portray Muhammad in a positive light, though? If you marry
his first marriage, he married very old. So when he married the smaller or the younger ones, that is because of the reasoning of promoting Islam. Aisha would have promoted Islam much later after his death, and etc. That's the whole BS, you know, the standard BS. Now, let me prove that Muhammad was a pedophile. From the chain of narrations and everything from Ibn Ishaq. This is Ibn Ishaq, page number 311. You can find this hadith is Musnad Ahmad as well. And you can show it on screen, FYI.
Well, I got it right here in the book. I was going to bring that up, but...
You can show it on the screen. I am showing it.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, where actually people can... Yeah, where people can actually see it and read it instead of just looking at my book. Yeah, okay. There we go.
This is page number 311 of the book of Sirat al-Nabi by Ibn Ishaq. And it says that messenger, the noble messenger, basically, it is recorded by Suhaili as well, recorded that the apostle saw Umul Fadl when she was a baby crawling. Before him and said, if she grow up when I'm still alive, I will marry her. Can you allow such kind of a filthy minded person in your home that he will look at your baby daughter who is crawling, and they use the word in Musnad Ahmad as Fatim, the one who suckled the breast of the mother. Such a small baby, under two years old baby, he looked at her and said, when she grow up and I am still alive, I'll marry her. Anyone in this world right now would allow such a filthy minded person in their home? That's my question.
Not mine. And this is what we were talking about earlier about, you know, what men have these natural desires for women more or less their own age. And so when you start thinking about you have an old grandpa like me having desires for a girl, now, let's just forget 2 years old and forget an infant. I mean, that's just there's something wrong there. But for Aisha, 9 years old. And to say that he's a pattern of conduct to follow, there's just – you cannot get around that. And to knock it down to 2 years old and say, look, I think I'm going to marry her when – you know, if I'm still alive when she grows up. How old are you going to be when she grows up? Well, what do you mean by grown up? When she's 8 or 9 or 10? Well, that's only, you know
–
Right. Yeah. I mean – Yeah, thank God that he did die. Yeah, just thank God that he did die.
Thank you to the Jewish lady. Thanks to the Jewish lady.
Yeah.
Brother Eric, how does that affect the narrative? If Khadija was about the same age as Muhammad, how does that affect the narrative of Muhammad?
It doesn't give Muhammad the edge that he married a very old lady, and it is not. So that defiles the verdict. Like, he was a normal guy. They want to promote him. Hey, look, see, he married a very old lady. So
how did Khadija die then? Because does that affect the death of Khadija then? Because the thing is, he only goes after those women once Khadija dies.
Yeah, so Khadija died. What's the big deal? Do you know the average age at that particular time? What was the average age? Because they didn't have medication, they didn't have anything. What was the average age of that area or era? You need to look at that as
well. Well, it's probably the 40s or 50s. If you're talking, you know, even before the Middle Ages, you're not, you know, we would say that somebody, if they die when they're 60 years old today, you know, they're young. Well, that's because we have We have consistent food supplies. We have safe food supplies. We have great medical care as compared to back then. I mean, back then you could get something as simple as appendicitis and it would kill you. Whereas today you get appendicitis, they go cut it out, and you're home, you know, the next day, for crying out loud. So the life expectancy back then was much shorter than what it is today. And I think I'm understanding your connection here with making Khadija older, because, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but what they're saying is, look, Muhammad took one for the team and he married this older woman. So after she dies, when he starts to go look for new wives, he's not looked as in a bad of light, especially when he goes for somebody much, much younger like Aisha. Is that what you're trying to say?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's the narrative, because every time you talk about age of Aisha, they will bring up Khadija. So look, they will always, no matter which Muslim you will talk to, they will, no matter what argument you give or what argument they give to begin with, eventually they will bring up Khadija and her age. Why? Because that's the only escape point to say, hey, look, she was 40. He was not looking for young girls, right? But if we look at that, because I tried to explore it, because I wanted to see what were the early marriages of Khadija. So some people say she was married twice, or some say she was married thrice before Muhammad. So I was trying to figure out how many times she was married before and figure out what were her original children. So to figure out what Fatima and the age of Fatima, and I was trying to do some research and figured out the age 40 has a big dilemma in it. It has a huge dilemma, very huge dilemma. So why was Khadija's age has such a huge dilemma, and why did Muslimin picked up the age 40, which is not a sound narration to
give? Now that you mention that, you know, they did it in order to make him look as though he was doing a noble thing by marrying a matriarchal lady, Bellan asked, wasn't she a successful merchant? Yeah, she was. She had her own business. This is one of the greatest ironies of history, is that you have a woman who has her own successful business, and then you have a man comes along, and he pretty much takes women in that entire culture that he sets up now within Islam itself and enslaves them so they can't have successful businesses. It's kind of weird how all that worked out. So, The other ones that I wanted to get into, I don't know if we have. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add to that, Adam? Is there something
else? These are my 2 points that I wanted to bring up over here. Thank you.
Okay. Right. Okay. Thank you for coming. So.
Robert would like to share it apart from the Bible.
Yeah. Go ahead. Absolutely. You can share your screen. Is that what you're doing? Uh-oh, did I just bump somebody out of the... here we are. Okay, no, I didn't bump anybody out. Yep.
It's part of Deuteronomy 21. We will compare what God said in Bible and actions of Muhammad. We'll begin at verse 10, marrying a captive woman. When you go to war against your enemies, and the Lord your God delivers them into your hands, and you take captive. If you notice among the captives a beautiful woman, and are attracted to her, you may take her as your wife. Bring her into your home, and have her shave her head, trim her nails, and put aside the clothes that she was wearing when captured. After she has lived in your house and mourned her father and mother for a full month, then you may go to her and be her husband, and she shall be your wife. If you are not pleased with her, let her go wherever she wishes. You must not sell her or treat her as a slave, since you are dishonored. Here, a big comparison between what Muhammad did and what God said in Bible. This is here we can see in Bible there is nothing called Mulk al-Yameen, a right-hand possessed in Islam, is well known in Islam. You can take a captive and do sexual intercourse without a marriage contract. This is called right-hand possessed. Okay? And after you enjoy, if you'd like to leave her and sell her to another man, the same thing. Here, completely different. Here, leave her for 1 month to cool down after she lost her family and marry her with a contract, not like Islam. And if you'd like to divorce her, but she is not slave anymore. This is what I would like to show, the difference between Bible and what Muhammad did.
And that's a great segue into the next thing that I was going to get into, because this is always, especially in today's political climate, this is a very hot button issue, and it's slavery, Islamic slavery. And I get the automatic knee-jerk response is didn't those Europeans participate in the transatlantic slave trade? Yes, they did. Didn't people in the United States participate in slavery? Yes, they did. Does that make it right? No, it doesn't. So if you have somebody, if we were to say that George Washington owned slaves, does that make it right? Is George Washington, even though he's considered the father of our country, supposed to be a pattern of conduct to follow? What about Thomas Jefferson? Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. Does it make it right that he owned slaves? Does it make it permissible to own slaves? And the answer is no. Thomas Jefferson is not Thomas Jefferson wasn't benevolent, kind, great moral character, affectionate, compassionate. He wasn't all of these things. So does that mean that we're supposed to own slaves? Well, no, it doesn't. So the bottom line is when – let's just – the transatlantic slave trade, about 14 million slaves were transported from the west coast of Africa to the Western Hemisphere. Most of them went into Central and South America. There were millions, yes, there were millions, a couple million that reached North America, but the majority went to the Central and South America and out in the West Indies, out in the Caribbean also. That's where the majority – oh, by the way, 2 out of every 3 were men to work on these plantations. When you look at the 29 million that went eastward, 29 million, yes, 29 million that went eastward, 2 out of every 3 were female. 2 out of every 3 were for female. For what purpose? For what purpose? For what purpose? Yes, sex slavery. So when we look at the Quran verses, O Prophet, we have made lawful to thee thy wives to whom those hast paid their dowries and those slaves whom thy right hand possesses out of the prisoners of war whom Allah has assigned thee. Quran 4, verse 24. All married women are forbidden unto you except those captives whom your right hand possesses. Even if the woman's husband survives the battle and she is still married, they're still allowed to rape that woman. Chapter 24, verse 32, and marry those among you who are single and those who are fit among your male slaves and your female slaves. Sahih Bukhari, volume 7, book 62, number 137, narrated Abu Sayyid al-Khudri. We got female captives in the holy war. Who is blowing out my ears here? Steve, is that you? Steve's playing his guitar. Steve, you're killing me, brother. I need to talk to you also, Steve, about some intro music for Tuesday night. We were discussing that with Rad, something about a pony or something. I can't remember. We'll talk about it later. Let's see. So here we got a female captive in the war booty, and we used to do coitus interruptus. So we add, listen to what Allah's apostle said. This benevolent, kind, great moral character, affectionate, compassionate one had to say about this. So we asked Allah's apostle about it. He said, do you really do that? Repeating the question thrice. There is no soul that is destined to exist but will come into existence till the day of resurrection. So he says, don't do it. Just rape them. That's all right. That's all right. Go ahead. Another Bukhari. It says, Allah's messenger, Anas bin Malik, Allah's messenger was on a journey, and he had a black slave called Anjasha, and he was driving camels very fast, and there were women riding on the camels. Allah's messenger said, "Why, Haka, may Allah be merciful unto you, O Anjasha, drive slowly the camel." So in other words, they're saying that Muhammad owned slaves. And you can, I can go on and on and on with you know, Ghassan Ubadu Dawood, Ghassai Muslim, all citing the fact that Muhammad owned slaves, traded slaves, and had people enslaved. So, I mean, let's just take a pause here, and let's just look at this person who is supposed to be a good example for you in the Apostle of Allah, chapter 33:21. This is supposed to be, according to the Quran, according to Allah, a role model for you to follow, according to chapter 33, verse 21. So, number one, he's 53 years old when he consummates a marriage with a 9-year-old little girl. A good example for you in the Apostle. Is that a good example for anybody? And it just wasn't consummating the marriage, for crying out loud. This guy lived with this little girl until she was 18, for 9 years, until the end of his life, he stayed with this girl. But I guess she didn't complain. I guess that makes it all right. She was a lucky girl, according to Steve's video. Yes, Steve, go ahead. Hold on, let me unmute you. Did I mute you? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, I just want to show. Can I just show another video for 2 minutes?
Yeah, go ahead. We got about 12 minutes left. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Now, if you guys don't know who Ayatollah Khomeini was.
Who? The Ayatollah, the Rock of Rock and Rolla.
Oh, oops, that was the wrong one. Sorry, guys. Wrong video. Share screen. I just want to show you. This is about Ayatollah Khomeini.
Oh yeah, I think I've seen this one. Yeah, this is disgusting. Would that be hashtag disgust? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
ونطلب منه العلم حتى صارت علاقتنا معه وثيقة جدا وقد اتفق مرة أن وجهت إليه دعوة من مدينة لعفر هي اسمها لعفر كده مظلومة طيب وهي مدينة تقع غرب الموصل على مسيرة ساعة ونصف تقريبا بالسيارة فطلبني للسفر معه فسافرت معه فاستقبلونا وأكرمونا غاية الكرم مدة بقائنا عند إحدى العوائل الشيعية المقيمة هناك وقد قطعوا عهدا بنشر التشيع في تلك الأرجاء وما زالوا يحتفظون بصورة تذكارية لنا ثم تصويرها في دارهم ولما انتهت مدة السفر رجعنا وفي طريق عودتنا ومرورنا في بغداد أراد الإمام أن يرتاح من عناء السفر فأمر بالتوجه إلى منطقة العطيفية نظرك لمروسة طيب حيث يسكن هناك رجل إيراني الأصل يقال له سيد صاحي كانت بينه وبين الإمام معرفة قوية وبعدين فرح سيد صاحي بمجيئنا وكان موصولون إليه عنده فصنع لنا غداء فاخرة واتصل ببعض أقاربه فحضروا واستحم منزله احتفاء بنا وطلب سيد صاحب إلينا المبيت عنده تلك الليلة هي دي المصيبة وبعدين توافق الإمام ثم لما كان العشاء أتوا بالعشاء وكان الحاضرون يقبلون يلقى الإمام ويسألونه ويجيب عن أسئلته ولما حان وقت النوم دخلنا يا دكتور
نعم
ولما حان وقت النوم وكان الحاضرون قد انصرفوا إلى أهل الدار أبصر الخميني صبية بعمر 4 سنوات أو 5 سنوات لكنها جميلة جدا فطلب الإمام أبيها سيد صاحب إحضارها للتمتع بها وافق أبوه بفرح فاتح فبات الإمام الخميني والصبية في حضنه شبه إيه؟ ونحن نسمع بكاءها وصراخها طوال الليل عيلة 4 سنوات وهذا كيف العمر قاعد في الصبة يعاشر صبية عندها 4 سنوات يعني من الصبر والدبر حتى البنت تبكي وتصرخ ولا رحمة في قلبه المهم أنه أمضى تلك الليلة يا دكتور فلما أصبح الصباح وجلسنا لنتناول الإفطار نظر إلي فوجد علامات الإنكار واضحة في وجهي الصبية 4 سنين تصرخ إذ كيف يتمتع بهذه الطفلة الصغيرة وفي الدار شابات بالغات راشدات وكان يتمتع بواحدة بالغة ولا رشيدة كان بإمكاني التمتع بإحداهن فلم يفعل. مهم. فقال لي خميني يقول له سيد حسين ما تقول في التمتع بالطفلة؟ إيش رأيك؟ قلت له سيد القول قولك، ها قول قولك والصواب فعلك، وأنت إمام مجتهد ولا يمكن لمثلي أن يرى أو يقول إلا ما تراه أنت أو تقول، ومعلوم أني لا يمكن الاعتراض وقت ذاك. سيد حسين إن التمتع بها جاهز ولكن بالمداعبة والتقبيل والتفخيم.
That's just, I mean, this is like Adam this is like Adam playing that teaching last week when they were talking about eating other human beings.
Share the link.
Yeah, pop the link into chat if you can, if you put it in private chat. Okay, yeah, I'll pop it into the...
I can't put stuff on this.
That's fine. Here we go. I got it. Copy link address, and I'll put it in chat for all three places we're streaming to, Facebook, YouTube, and let me see here. Is it up? Let me look. I don't see it. Doggone it. Did I do it wrong? Post a comment. Paste. There we go. Okay. All right. It's there now. I might have done it. If I did it twice, I'm sorry. Yeah, that, I mean.
Can you hear you?
Can you hear me? Did I mute myself? How am I muted? Steve, did you mute me? I don't know how that happened. I'm sorry. Okay. I put it in chat. Looks like I did it. I didn't do it twice. I thought I might have done it twice. Yeah. This is, I mean, think about this. The father, what did the father, what did he say? He could hear her screaming and crying all night. What kind of man is that? I mean, what kind of person does that? I mean, what kind of man allows that to happen to his little girl, his baby girl? I don't care if it would have been St. Peter. The man's going to die. You don't do that to the little girl, to my little girl. But you don't do that to a little girl, period. This would be the equivalent of walking into a preschool and doing this to a little girl. And I'm not saying that all the Muslims in the world follow the Ayatollah Khomeini. That's just a great illustration. I appreciate you bringing that up, Steve, of how evil that man, how despicably evil that man was.
You know what's good about this is that it's two Muslims talking about it. It's two Muslims talking about it and saying, this is what our religion teaches. And I don't know if some of you guys maybe are too young to remember, Ayatollah Khomeini is the one who started the Islamic revolution
right. In
the whole Muslim world. Even though he was Shiite, he started the Islamic revolution in the whole world. Women were not wearing hijabs back then. They started because of him, you know. And so he was, this is what he did.
Yeah, this is Jimmy Carter stuff. I mean, they took the hostages for 444 days, and it was because the Iranian revolution. This is the guy when he came back. I think he had been exiled to France or something like this, and the Shah goes out of town. He comes back in, and the next thing you know, the Shah's out. Yeah, 1970. It was 1979. I remember that. I'm that old too, Steve. You're not that far in front of me. All right, folks. So let's kind of summarize here before we call it a day. Now, if we're – and this is where I just do not want to ever hear it again, where people start saying you're insulting Muhammad. We are not insulting Muhammad. What we're doing – hi, Connie. It's good to see you. What we're doing is we are simply stating what Islamic sources have to say about Muhammad. And we're not talking about Daif or these weak hadiths that were provided for us by a certain imam. Thank you, John, courtesy of John Isaac. But we're talking about the Sahih, the most trusted hadiths. The most trusted hadiths clearly demonstrate that the role model, according to Quran chapter 33, verse 21, was 53 years old when he consummated a marriage and continued to consummate that marriage or continued to engage physically, sexually, with a 9-year-old little girl. So when he was 54, she was 10. When he was 55, she was 11. She's still a little girl. That's just wrong. But yet he's supposed to be a good model. That's not Islamophobia. That's not hate preaching. The only hate preaching going on is people who try to defend that type of stuff. Second thing was, he sanctioned the murders of people who would dare to criticize him. Anybody that would talk out again, and we still see it today, anybody that would dare to criticize us, it is against Islamic law. It's against the Sharia. It's, I read you what the law says. Anybody that reviles Allah and his messenger, which puts Muhammad pretty much on parity with Allah.
Yeah, that shirk.
It's sick is what it is.
And it doesn't matter. We have our own constitution. They can live in their own country and do as they please, if that's of their country, but it's not of our country, and that's why we stand against it.
Yeah, it's Islamophobia for doing that too, by the way.
So what? It doesn't matter. They can call us all names. We have our constitution. This is America, and this is how it is. And this is what we stand up for. Is our rights in our country. This is our country. It's not their country. I don't care what they call us. It doesn't matter what they say.
And we can say what the heck we want about him too. That's First Amendment freedom right there.
We speak and live and have our being. We proclaim Christ. This is a Christian nation. Yes, no, all of them aren't Christians, but it was based on Christianity. And therefore, the grace of God, go we.
Yeah. Belle-Anne does it. She's been posting some good. The truth is an insult to your role model. The problem is not with us. It is not with us. It is you. Exactly. That's exactly right. Okay, so pedophile. Hold on. Pedophile, murderer, slave, trader, slave, or enslaver. Somebody who owns slaves, so he was a slaver. He was a slave trader, and he enslaved people, and then those slaves that he enslaved and owned, he had physical relations with them. Now, I remember all the hoopla that came out a couple years ago when people started talking about Thomas Jefferson having a relationship with one of the slave girls and fathering a child with her, but yet it's okay to talk about it. This is the great thing that, and this is what you're saying, Connie. It's a great thing that you can actually provide positive criticisms or provide a critical analysis of what our founding fathers did in the past. And then lastly, and I'm just going to say this, he was an adulterer. I mean, if you are married to a woman or married to 10 women and you start having sexual relations with somebody that is not your wife, you can call her a slave. You can say her right hand possesses her. I don't care. It's adultery in God's eyes. And to try to say that he was a good example is glorifying sin, sinful behavior.
Yes. Lasciviousness, we were warned of that by Paul 2,000 years ago. And so Satan jumps on it and says, oh, yeah, then we'll do it. Whatever God said, Satan says, okay, well, we'll do it.
Yeah, and that's
sin. We're going to do sin. We're going to legislate it. You know, and in Sharia law, they have slaves, freemen. You know, so where did Muhammad stop slavery? It's in the Sharia law. It's in the, you know, the reliance of the traveler. Don't rely on that traveler. It'll get you killed.
Yeah, and this is why I just can't understand why African Americans gravitate towards the Nation of Islam, because the Nation of Islam is a racist organization. It believes separation of the races. Okay, that's our cue for Blog Talk Radio. Everybody, thank you for coming, sharing your Sunday afternoon with us, and we'll see you next week on the Crossing the Crescent discussion group here in the Real Interfaith Dialogue. And you new guys coming here, Dr. Kufar Phobia. Thank you for showing up, brother. Yep, thank you for coming. We appreciate you. I'll make sure that you're on our mailing list now when I send these things out.
Cool.
All right. See you all next week. Thank you. God bless.
All right. God bless everybody.
All right, my Blog Talk Radio folks, I've gone over once again. Thank you for everybody that came. That's in their chat. and everybody that was over here on the board. Thank you for coming. We'll see you next week. We'll see you Tuesday.